All right, folks, welcome to Bright Videos News for Tuesday, July 28th, 2026. I'm Mike Adams, and I'm going to keep this relatively short because, as I mentioned yesterday, I'm working on a really very important course that will be available for free. It's about 12 hours in duration. I was able to record another hour today. This is going to take a while, but I'm 4 hours into it, and it's mind-blowing. I can't wait to share it with you, and I think you will find it to be the most valuable knowledge ever that you've ever received from me, no question about it. And I would say even among the most important information that you have ever learned about how to stay alive. And anyway, I'll keep you posted on that. I have an interview to play for you here today. I was a guest on with Maria Z, and so we're going to play that for you. And also want to let you know a couple of things that are happening today, assuming the schedule doesn't change. But today at, 1 p.m. Central, I will be a guest with Rex Jones. That's the son of Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show. I'm also going to be a guest on Redacted, and I think they're broadcasting live. That'll be at 3 p.m. Central today. And Redacted is just such a great show. You got to check it out. I'm also going to be a guest on Coffee and a Mic with Michael Ferris. I don't think he's doing that live. I think he's releasing that maybe the following day, but we'll find out. And then after he releases it, we'll republish it as well. So I'm also a guest on another show called The Church and State Show as well. So I'm going to be a guest on 4 different shows throughout the day. Now, before I get into some of today's news, and I'm going to keep it brief for reasons I already mentioned, there's something I want to show you that is a little bit off the beaten path here. And I don't know if you've seen these videos before. They're kind of viral videos of a man named Anatoly. And Anatoly is a professional elite weightlifter who physically looks rather small compared to the big, bulky people that you typically see in the gyms. And I think he's Ukrainian, actually, or at least he was born Ukrainian. Anyway, Anatoly is a master of making viral videos. He's a master social engineer. And it's absolutely brilliant what he has done. And I have found what I think is the most brilliant video he's ever done, which is only, 2 minutes or something, or 3 minutes maybe. I want to show it to you here because his overall shtick, as we say, is that he goes into a gym and he pretends to be a gym cleaner and he pretends to be weak and kind of maybe on the spectrum, let's say, right? And he challenges big bulky guys to like lifting competitions and so on, and they laugh at him, and then eventually he ends up lifting the weight to the absolute astonishment of the people around him. And you're about to see him do a deadlift of over 400 pounds. It's like, what? 400 pounds? And that would cause most people's spines to explode, you know. But he does it, and again, he's a professional. He's an elite level weightlifter, but he's also nailed the social engineering on this. So I wanted to show you this video and then just have a couple of notes, because this is a cultural phenomenon, and I want you to pay attention to what's going on here, because it's really interesting. Here we go.
Challenge. C-H-E.
No, I can spell.
Maybe you go first, and then after you, I do.
Are you sure? Like, positive you want to do this?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I have insurance. Okay. Maybe it looks like I want to have some money from insurance now to make an injury.
This is a workman's comp deal, but leave us out of it. We don't want to know.
Come on, mister.
There you go.
Good one.
Next.
You're what?
Next. You're next.
C-H-A-L-L-A-N-G-E.
Challenge. Is it okay? We'll put some money.
Listen, I don't want to take your money, man. You know, you got a good job, you're doing good.
You not take my money. I will take your money. Oh. Two reps is easy for me.
No. Take your knees out. No. Don't go in. Dangerous.
Like this one.
You gotta drop that ass.
Why it's so heavy?
It's gravity, man. It's a real thing.
You are the winner. Take it.
Now, let this be a lesson. Today, let this be a lesson. This one's on us.
This is lesson for me.
Lesson for you. Let it be your motivation. Yes. Come back. Yes. Another challenge. We'll do
guys,
it
you are awesome. I'll just send this money to my family now. Like, sorry for that. Is it okay? At least I'll just clean the area here.
Yeah, bro. Yeah.
Yeah, just I need a minute. Like. So, like, I need oh, nice one.
Hey,
what?
You said you never did this before?
So just lift it 405 pounds like it was nothing.
No, I not lifting, I move it.
Same thing.
No.
So lift and move, same.
I can't lift it. I can just only move it. I'll put it back, guys. Just hold them up, please.
Yeah, I got it.
It was here, guys, or where? This is like regular map, guys.
You need to talk to your employer, bro. That's the work.
No, you're joking. Take it one more time. What? Guys, why you like? Man. I can only move the bars to clean under.
See, you almost did that challenge thing. You almost took all our money. I know what you're about now.
You're a shark.
Okay, so a couple of things to note there is that Anatoly, what people love about him is that he pretends to be weak instead of what most people on YouTube are doing, which is pretending to be really, really strong or pretending to be the richest or pretending to be the most amazing. What Anatoly does is he pretends to be weak and humble and small and kind of not really well-informed, you know? And it's great when he finally lifts it. And the other thing is, he doesn't, you notice here, he was kind of challenging them to a bet. He could have taken their money, lifted the weight, taken their money, but he didn't. He acted like he couldn't lift it. And it showed also that the other weightlifters there, they refused to take his money. And this is one of the interesting things that I notice in these videos from Anatoly, which I do watch from time to time when I'm, you know, rolling or stretching or whatever. And it's that in the culture of gymnasiums and weightlifting, the people are actually very nice. They're quite polite. They're not suffering from roid rage typically. There might be a few exceptions who are. But overall, people will treat you in a polite manner and in an honest manner, if you are also polite to them. And this is what Anatoly demonstrates time and time again. So even in this case, one of those weightlifters said, you know, you don't have to pay us. This one's on us. Let this be a lesson that, you know, you can train and you can come back and this can be your goal. That's actually really good advice. And the guy who said that did not know that he was on camera, right? So that's very authentic. And the other guy, the bigger guy, was also, you know, trying to be protective of Anatoly, like, you know, be careful, you know, don't hurt yourself. And we see this time and time again. And then interestingly, when Anatoly does lift the 400 plus pounds, then the larger man is like, how did you do that? And this is the fun part where Anatoly goes into the mind games. He said, well, I didn't lift it. I just moved it. And the big guy says, that's the same thing. To move it, you had to lift it, right? And it's great. It's funny because for a moment, everybody's heads are spinning around like, what? But Anatoly gives these very funny, he elicits a lot of humor in this, saying these funny things. And then also, he carries around this mop because he's pretending to be a gym cleaner, you know? And this mop, I think it weighs like 32 kilograms. which is a very heavy mop. And he always acts like the mop is very lightweight so that when he hands it to people, it, you know, they can barely handle it. They almost fall forward trying to hold up the mop because they don't realize it's going to weigh so much. And but then Anatoly just acts like, oh, this is my mop and I'm a cleaner here and this is how I'm so strong. Is at the end, you know, that's the conclusion. It's like, wow, that guy, he's running around with a really heavy mop. That must be why he's so strong. Actually, he trains like a lunatic. I mean, I've seen his training videos and he trains. He is a hardcore heavyweight training person, right? So anyway, I just think this is worth noting because in the world of influence and memes and so on, and by the way, I think he sells a, he sells like a strength training course. So he does have some back end to create an income for what he's doing. Although it's not mentioned in every video, by the way, but he does have a course for how to be strong. And clearly he knows how to be strong. That's for sure. But I think this is really valuable in the age of influence and everybody's vying for attention and everybody's trying to, you know, it seems have a bigger audience to, you know, attract more and more people to whatever you're saying. And to some extent, I'm the same way. Of course, I would argue that my information will save your life, right? So I'm not here to teach you how to lift more weights necessarily or how to make more money. You know, that's never been my focus, but how to survive this world. And sometimes that is about keeping your assets intact. And sometimes that, you know, that's about protecting your health and protecting your immune system and so on. So it spans many areas. But in the world of influence, authenticity and humility are currency. They go a long way. And you, just like me, you're probably, we're sick and tired of, you know, celebrities, I don't know, or like younger women that want to gain views by, you know, showing their boobs more or this or that. Just, you know, come on, just low IQ, stupid stuff, right? We don't have any interest in that. That doesn't help us. It doesn't give us more knowledge, doesn't give us more solutions, etc. But what attracts intelligent people to content is, I believe, both authenticity and practicality. It has to be intelligent information, and it has to be information that you can use, or that if you understand it, then it helps you better navigate the world. And so that's what I try to do every single day. And sometimes I'm kind of like an intellectual Anatoly. Sometimes I will go into an interview that starts out kind of, you know, kind of dumbed down. You know, I mean, I've been in those in the past. That's not what I'm doing right now. I mean, the people I'm interviewing with right now are brilliant, you know, like Daniel Davis and Redacted and Maria Z and so on. But I've done interviews that are just more kind of, I don't know, kind of joking around, because we all need to let our hair down from time to time. Not that I have long hair, but in those interviews, I'm kind of like an intellectual Anatoly. It's like, ah, let's joke around, let's play around, let's have some fun. And then, oh, you asked a real question. Okay, so here's the research, here's the evidence, here's the encyclopedia of knowledge. And then it's like, brrr. It's like doing a deadlift of 400 pounds, but with your brain. And so sometimes I've done that. Other times I've just joked around and let off steam, and that's okay too. But usually what I try to do is just be authentic, be well-informed, make sure that if you take the time to listen to me, you're not wasting your time. Other than maybe the last 5 minutes here, because I'm showing you, you know, an Anatoly viral video. I understand that's not the normal thing here, but it's instructive of what I'm explaining here. So I value your time, and I always want to make sure that you learn something and that you gain practical knowledge about how to make your life work better, how to protect your assets, how to be more resilient, self-reliant, etc. So anyway, I just want to show you the Anatoly video to explain my philosophy there. Now, in terms of actual serious stuff that's happening in the world, there's a lot. So the in Saudi Arabia, according to reports, three refineries have been struck by drones. It seems like at least two of them are suffering serious damage and serious long-term fires. Perhaps one of them isn't such a serious fire. But this is being blamed on the Houthis. And yet I've heard, although I don't have any direct contact with the Houthis, of course, but I've heard that they have said it wasn't them. So maybe it's a false flag. Maybe it's somebody else that's trying to take millions of barrels of oil offline every day. Because what's happening now, due to these attacks on Saudi refineries, and remember that Russian refineries have been severely damaged by drones from Ukraine. The drones that are made by NATO, obviously, but they're launched from Ukraine. This 7 million barrels a day now being taken off the world market from Saudi Arabia, this is adding to the global supply shock and shortage of other refined products, such as diesel or kerosene, jet fuel, right? Even at some level, gasoline. But the ones that matter the most are diesel and jet fuel. Now, Trump said in a speech in the last half day or so, he said that the United States has 1,000 years of gasoline. And everybody's like, what? Come on. First of all, gasoline only lasts a couple of years. So if you had 1,000 years of gasoline, it wouldn't last until even the year 2030. So goodbye. Does he mean 1,000 years of oil, maybe? Well, you have to refine oil into gasoline and into diesel and jet fuel. And you have to have the right kind of oil going into the right configuration of refineries to produce the products coming out. Now, he's right in the sense that America has a lot of gasoline refining capability, and America has a lot of the light sweet oil that is useful for creating gasoline. So maybe what he should have said, to be more accurate, is we can routinely create, we can refine all the gasoline that we need domestically. And that is true. But we can't refine all the diesel that we need domestically. And that's what's necessary to power the trains and the trucks, the things that transport the food and the construction materials and the hardware, etc. So even if you have all the gasoline in the world, which in essence we do, I mean, we have plenty of gasoline, we can produce gasoline, but how are you going to get the food delivered to the grocery store without sufficient diesel? Or if the diesel costs a lot more, then what's that going to do to food prices? Or if there's diesel rationing or scarcity, maybe the military needs all the diesel and the civilian market is like, good luck, no diesel for you, you know? Then what do we do? And by the way, it's diesel trucks that deliver the gasoline to the gas stations. So if you don't have diesel, you can't deliver the gas. You ever think about that? Yeah. Because highway rigs don't run on gas. None of them do. They all run on diesel. Okay, one more thing that's happening to change the subject here is SanDisk, one of the semiconductor companies that I've warned was obviously way overvalued, has plunged, I think, 12%. And Samsung and SK Hynix and Micron are all plunging, just like I said they would. Why? Because, well, there's news out of China that China now can not only carry out UV lithography that bypasses all the restrictions of the what's called the ASML company, their equipment, which is the microchip fabrication. So China doesn't need to rely on those European technologies anymore. They can make their own microchips. But also China has a company, I think it's CXMT, I think that's what it is, that makes high bandwidth memory, that is now scaling up massively all this high bandwidth memory that competes with Samsung, Micron, and SK Hynix. Those are the top three high bandwidth memory producers in the West. I mean, two of those are in Korea. Micron, I think, is based in the U.S. So all these Western semiconductor companies are now plunging, and also SpaceX is now significantly below its IPO price. And of course, I didn't buy any of these. I was warning about SpaceX. I've been warning about these bubbles. Don't take it as investment advice, but there's a reason why I don't buy any of these stocks. I do buy gold and silver, but unfortunately, probably gold and silver could go even lower than where they are now in terms of dollars, but there's a reason why that doesn't worry me. You see, when stocks go down, you lose dollars because you don't have the stocks in your hands, and the only thing you can really do with those stocks is trade them for dollars. Whereas if you have gold and silver in your hands, if the gold and silver go down in dollars, it doesn't change how much gold you have in your hands. It's still the same ounces, and you can use them in lots of ways. You don't have to trade them for dollars. You could save them and use them to buy a ranch or a business or a vehicle or whatever. So I don't care so much about gold and silver going up or down, because I know the long-term trend is that they're going to go up. So even though they're going to go down, probably a little bit more, a lot of it stemming from this war and the global economic implosion that's resulting from this. It's causing a lot of liquidity stress in the system, and a lot of investors and even some central banks are ditching gold for their own emergency liquidity, you know? But even though that's the case, I see gold and silver going down as just another buying opportunity, another opportunity to stack some more gold and silver. So I've got a special report on that, a short one. What is it, like 11 minutes, I think, of why I think gold and silver could fall even a little bit more at this point. But that's, you know, don't panic. In the medium term, I believe they're going to skyrocket, and it's a good time to acquire them. And then after that, we'll have the Maria Z interview. So enjoy the rest of the show and get ready. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to have this amazing bombshell program for you. It'll be on brightyou.com, and it'll be free to watch. It'll be life-changing. And in the meantime, if you want clean food and high-end nutritional supplements and storable food that's lab-tested, certified, organic, etc., we offer that, healthrangerstore.com. And if you want emergency preparedness gear like satellite phones and also solar generators and Faraday bags for your equipment, then our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, has all that right now at sat123.com. So check those out. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the rest of today's broadcast. Well, unfortunately, I think gold and silver are going to fall in the short term yet even more, and I'll tell you why. But they will explode in the medium term here for reasons that I think also will become obvious. Welcome to this analysis. I'm Mike Adams, and you know, I've been very public about what I paid for silver, for example. And, you know, I made two large purchases of silver in the last, I don't know, year or so, year and a half, whatever. The earlier one was $30, and then the latest one was $76. And I follow my own advice. When I purchase silver, I take physical delivery, not in my own hands in this case, but I have it stored and vaulted and stacked, but it's allocated in my name with our trusted partners at Battalion Metals that I'll tell you about, which is also my sponsor in the metal space. But their vaults are very trustworthy, and they're outside the banking system, so they're not subjected to regulatory pressures from, you know, the FDIC or whoever in Washington, D.C. But when you have physical possession, then you don't need to worry so much about the dollar valuation. What matters is how many ounces you have. How many ounces? This is about stacking ounces of gold and silver as a means of protecting your assets and being able to transition into whatever system comes next, or being able to trade metals for land or vehicles or ammo or whatever you need to purchase something that's big, gold and silver will be the way to do that, especially as dollar devaluation accelerates and inflation, you know, obviously gets a lot worse. Here's the thing. A lot of people, though, they buy gold and silver on margin, and they play in the paper markets, which I have never advocated. You've never heard me say, you know, buy a gold ETF and, you know, leverage it 10 to 1, because that's insane. Those people are getting hurt badly by the price volatility. But the people who have the physical gold and silver are not being hurt at all, really, because they still have the same number of ounces. So as long as you have the same number of ounces, you know, you're doing fine. And you can simply add to that dollar cost averaging into it over time. Whether the dollar price of gold and silver are high or low, if you're dollar cost averaging into it, then you're going to do very well over time. Obviously, because the Fed is going to continue to print dollars. The Treasury is going to continue to borrow. Like, that is never ending until the collapse. One day, this whole system will, of course, collapse. And that may not be that far off. Who knows? And when that day comes, it's the people who hold the paper contracts or the dollars themselves, you know, the fiat currency. Those are the people that will be the worst off. While those who have metal will be sitting on real physical assets that have real value in the real world. So my overall message today is, yeah, I see gold dropping. I see silver dropping. I recently interviewed Andy Shechtman, who explained what's happening. And it looks to him, and I concur with this, like there's still a lot of market paper manipulation taking place, both in the West and outside the United States, so that the central banks of the world, especially China and others, and also wealthy people connected to Trump, etc., can acquire a massive amount of physical metal at a deep, deep discount. And this is all in preparation for a strong change in policy, which will allow the pricing of metals to run. There'll be a day where the market manipulations cease and the metals are allowed to run to achieve their organic, natural valuation. Why? Because that benefits the US and China both, however, in different ways. Scott Bessent seems to be pushing us towards a gold revaluation, which would, for every roughly $4,000 of gold's value, that would create about $1 trillion of free money for the US Treasury, which the Treasury could use to buy back some of its own debt and thus potentially reduce yields on the 10-year. But also in China, they're gearing up to be able to announce a partially gold-backed settlement currency system, or maybe currency is the wrong word, but a settlement system, a payment system between participating nations who can settle trade in a non-dollar currency that is backed, at least in part, by gold. So before that day comes, when gold is allowed to just run free and find its natural price, of course, all of these countries and central banks and wealthy people in the know, of course, they want the price to remain artificially suppressed so they can keep buying it, so they can keep stacking physical gold. That's what you and I should be doing. Take advantage of this, because one day, probably fairly soon, we're going to look back at this and think, man, remember when gold was only, you know, 4,000? And now what is it? You know, like, now it's 8,000 or 10,000 or whatever it's going to go to. Who knows? But 4,000 is going to be seen as a bargain. Just like, what, 4 years ago, 2,000 was the price. Now that's seen as a bargain. And I remember when gold crossed 2,000, that was in 2022, I believe. Yeah. Right when Russia first launched its military operation against Ukraine, gold went over $2,000 an ounce. And I remember thinking, gosh, I don't know if I should pay that much. You know, 2,000, man, that seems like a lot. Wish I had bought more then, huh? Because look at it now. And even though there's volatility, it's clearly trending higher and higher. And of course, China is ending the paper market manipulation in the retail space on gold and silver. That's happening right now. And China is expanding the Shanghai Gold Exchange operations and the gold storage facility in Hong Kong, getting ready for a massive amount of global trade. Why are they doing that? Because they know what's coming. They know that there's a day coming. I don't know. Let's call it G Day, you know, like not D Day, but G Day for gold. There's a G Day coming where the manipulation ends and the price is allowed to rise to its normal organic price, you know, actual price discovery. And when that happens, then you're going to see countries revaluing or backing settlement currencies with gold and benefiting from the higher price at that point. And that's when China will probably announce, like, hey, we've got 30,000 tons of gold that we didn't tell you about, you know, wink, wink, been secretly acquiring this for 20 years. And now we have an audit and we have the most gold in the world. So you can trust our settlement currency. That day is coming too. That's going to be a very interesting day. All right. So in the meantime, do your own research. Obviously, I'm not your investment advisor. And there's risk that gold and silver could go down in dollars, which is why I do not advocate any kind of leverage bets. I don't encourage you to be a commodities trader unless that's your profession, in which case you know more than I do about that. I'm just saying in the long run, gold and silver will outperform all fiat currencies because the fiat currency printing will never stop. So keep stacking, keep acquiring. Do your own research, of course. Make sure that it's appropriate for your investment goals. Make sure you understand the dollar risk that exists. And make sure that you keep your gold and silver safe. And if you want to use Battalion Metals, which is our sponsor and also co-founded by Tucker Carlson, and these are the folks I've been working with for 7 years now, I believe it is, you can reach them through our affiliate link, metalswithmike.com. And if you use metalswithmike.com, and if you make a purchase, use discount code RANGER. It'll give us a very small credit at no additional cost to you, and they will eliminate the shipping insurance fee for you. So you'll save money. We'll get a little bit of credit. It's not much because there's almost no margin in this. It'll help support us. It'll get you a better deal, and you'll be supporting trusted gold and silver retailers who don't play games. They don't run, you know, shenanigans and overpriced garbage. They are high integrity. They are trustworthy. Otherwise, Tucker wouldn't be involved with them, nor would I. These are the folks that will treat you right. They are pro-liberty. They are pro-honest money. They are pro, you know, independent sovereignty. And they can help you make it through the chaos that's coming. So check them out again, metalswithmike.com. And thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams, and you can find all of my videos at brightvideos.com and my articles at naturalnews.com. So thank you for listening. Take care.
Are we living through an orchestrated civilizational reset by way of energy wars? Whether intended or unintended, that is what the world as a whole is facing as a result of the very real escalating wars happening both in Russia, Ukraine, and the Middle East. With no current end in sight, regardless of the headlines and talking heads that keep promising peace negotiations, the entire planet is in serious, deep trouble. That's not hyperbole, and you don't have to take my word for it. Just listen to real economists, analysts, and those who track war for real are telling us. A recent article we shared from Mike Adams about this crisis states, quote, "The term World War E was coined by Matt Bracken to describe the global war over energy that connects Ukraine, the Middle East, and beyond." It goes on, quote, "I believe this captures the true nature of today's conflict. We are not witnessing random violence. We are watching a coordinated assault on the world's energy choke points," end quote. He's not wrong. And anyone who's honest should be warning all of you about what is coming, which is what we're going to do today. Mike Adams, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Maria. It's a great honor to join you. Appreciate your work and the invite as well.
Absolutely. It's a crucial time that we speak, actually. And every time I speak with you, I'm so glad to be having the conversation with you, because there are so many people out there who don't get the full picture. You are certainly one of the people who does. And in recent times, your conversations about this manufactured energy crisis is something I think a lot of people need to hear. I encourage people to go and watch your recent interview with Michael Yon and Matt Bracken on that. And we'll be sharing as well your write-up on that across our channels. What I really want to discuss with you, Mike, is the fact that I am of the belief that this war is not ending anytime soon. You and I acknowledged that pretty early on, that it was going to be quite catastrophic. What sort of conclusions are you coming to at this point?
Well, we're moving from a sort of survivable temporary war. We're transitioning, if this continues, into a civilizational reset ramification. And it's not just myself. There are others who are beginning to talk about this. Other economists, Dr. Chris Martinson is issuing urgent warnings. And of course, I had Michael Yon, as you mentioned, and Matt Bracken on. They're concerned about the very same thing. And this is not an irrational concern. So number one, if the escalation in the Middle East continues, let's say if Trump bombs power plants in Iran, which he has promised to do, and then Iran retaliates by taking out the remaining desalination plants in the Persian Gulf region, in Kuwait and Bahrain and other nations, then that entire region becomes uninhabitable. So you can't run an energy infrastructure if humans can't live there, right? I mean, that hopefully that should be almost self-evident, but yeah. We are just that close to that situation happening. And then there's another one, which would be radiation fallout. What if Trump decides to take this nuclear, as probably he is willing to do, although I'm not sure that the top Pentagon officials would let it go that far. Who knows? Hegseth probably would. He's crazy enough. But if you have radiation, you know, fallout, I mean, look what that did to Chernobyl. So the areas around Chernobyl are uninhabitable by humans for 300 years, by the way, since 1986. So you could just count out the Persian Gulf for 300 years. What happens to Earth without all those resources for three centuries? And the answer is you have a massive die-off and civilization as we know it ceases to function. So there you go.
Today, I saw the clip that Fox News is, excited about the prospect, essentially, of Trump striking energy infrastructure. They're planting that seed. And, you know, whether they actually feel excited or not, I mean, I don't know what's in their hearts. They seem to be pretty, pretty big fans of the war, apart from Laura Ingraham doing a little bit of a segment as to how unpopular this actually is. Trump is continuing to make public statements about how much everyone loves this war, and they're only concerned about gas prices. You mentioned Chris Martinson. He was recently on with Tucker discussing how high he thinks gas prices will go. Do you agree with his assessment on that? And yes. Do you think that that's what it's going to take for people to realize how stupid all of this is?
Yeah. And you know, Dr. Martinson, first of all, he's a meticulous researcher and he's extremely, he's very accurate in his numbers and in his research. Sometimes the projections may take longer than what he says. I'm guilty of that as well. But he's meticulous in the accuracy of his sourcing, and he's correct. So you can't fight hydrocarbon molecules with paper contracts, not forever. So, you know, you can artificially create lower prices in oil commodity or other commodities in the paper markets, but eventually that ends. And I think we're approaching that end right now, as I think WTI crude just went over $100 a barrel or close to that. And that's just the beginning. We're going to see oil at $150 a barrel for sure within the next 2 to 3 months. And that's not even the worst part of this. It's not even close to the worst part. So yeah, we'll probably have diesel rationing in America sometime later this year or some sort of rationing. Maybe it won't be called that, you know, but people won't be able to get all the diesel they want, not for farming or transportation, et cetera. And the diesel they can get will be much more expensive, perhaps $8 a gallon or
Eventually, if this continues, $10 a gallon. That's not out of the question. But that's not even the worst part of this. The worst part is that our entire global system, the infrastructure that supports 8 billion human beings on this planet, depends on all of these outputs out of the Persian Gulf, whether it's natural gas or ammonia, urea, or sulfuric acid, taking the sulfur out of the oil production, using the sulfuric acid to create phosphate fertilizers from, phosphate rock ore, and other things, helium and polyethylene and so on. When you lose a significant portion of these things, and that number ranges from, 10% to 35%, depending on the item we're talking about, then the world that you know doesn't function anymore the way that you're used to. There will be a global depression, global contraction of industry, global job loss, and global famine. And that's already baked in. So that, and Maria, that's not even a what if. I'm not even saying if this war continues, you're going to have all those things. That's a done deal. What I just said, the global depression and contraction and famine. If this goes on another 6 months, or let's say gets us into 2027 and the strait is still not functioning, then we begin to get into the civilizational reset, catastrophic effects where our world never returns to the world we once knew.
I can foresee that situation only because it perfectly aligns actually with Agenda 2030. The only problem that they will face is getting the infrastructure up that they say they need to achieve those goals with a global energy crisis. I can't see how the two will be achieved at the same time. And I think that in their hubris, they're going to find out that they can't actually have their mass surveillance state built at the same time as they're crashing the energy markets. I just can't see that that's going to be possible, Mike.
You're saying you can't see it's possible they're going to have a mass surveillance state rollout at the same time that they're crashing the energy infrastructure?
Well, I think that the energy shortages and the civil the civic response to the crisis worldwide is going to take precedence, and also the energy shortages are going to stop them, because it takes energy to build this stuff. It takes energy to transport the materials. It takes energy to run this stuff. If you've got people that can't get to work because you're now rationing, how are you going to get all of that infrastructure up in the first place? Maybe they have enough now, Mike, to enable the mass surveillance state, but certainly not to the extent of where they actually want to take this. I just can't see how it would be possible.
Well, don't forget that under the NDAA and the which invokes other acts like the Stafford Act here in America, that the government can seize control over all energy resources, and they can redirect those resources to the places they want them. So, for example, the diesel fuel and the jet fuel could be saved for military use or law enforcement use. And natural gas could be saved for the pipelines that feed the gas turbines for the data centers that run the surveillance. So they could deprive the people or, small industry or small businesses of electricity or human neighborhoods in order to redirect the available energy into the surveillance grid, which they would give it, the highest priority. So I think there actually is a way, because see, in North America, we're still very energy rich. I understand we still import, 6.5 million barrels of oil a day. But if you have lockdowns and you restrict the public from being able to drive, then you might eliminate the need for most of those 6.5 million barrels. And then you could power the military and you could power the data centers from domestically produced gas and a small amount of coal and hydro and wind and whatever you could produce domestically. But the people would be screwed for sure. Mm-hmm. So I can see them trying that.
Yeah, I can see them trying it for sure. And this is, I guess, the point. The agenda wouldn't be able to be achieved as in the ways in which, you know, people live life normally and don't feel really sharp sudden effects. Like right now their strategy is let this all collapse slowly, the boiling frog method. It's not going to be that with the crisis that we have right now in the Middle East. It's just not, it doesn't allow for that. So it's going to have to be something drastic in order to seize all of those resources from the people. I can't see any other way.
Yeah, you're right that there will be an engineered sudden reset, probably financial in nature, in order for the great taking to happen, in order for the CBDCs to be rolled out, while there's a declaration of, you know, martial law, essentially, or some kind of dictatorial control, which could include, by the way, pausing elections. So one of the theories that's worth considering is that the reason the GOP no longer cares about answering to the public or representing the American people, or the reason the White House doesn't care, is because they think in their own minds they don't have to get reelected. They can pull a Zelensky like Ukraine and just say elections are canceled, we're in a war, and just maintain, you know, Trump could just stay president for as long as he's around, I suppose. And the question is, who's going to stop that? And probably leftists would try something. You know, probably there would be an attempted, you know, popular revolution of some kind. Maybe elements of the military would say, no, we're not going to be part of a military dictatorship. You know, I'm sure some elements would resist that. So we could be looking at some serious social upheaval and political unrest or civil unrest here in America in the next couple of years.
I just want to say that I hope it doesn't get to that, obviously. But what we are doing here is wargaming possibilities that people should be prepared for. You know, I recall one of my first conversations with Doc Pete Chambers, and I just said to him as a veteran, as someone, you know, a former Green Beret, is your approach to, you know, talk to people about how they should approach the world that we're living in. And his response was essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, consider every worst possible scenario and prepare for it. And if it doesn't work out that way, well, that's good. At least you were prepared. That's a soldier's mindset, which I think everyone should be adopting in this day and age. Yeah. So in terms of, I was just going through Chris Martinson's timeline, actually, and there was a post about a major escalation in the past 24 hours. The UK MTO has just reported that a Saudi vessel has been struck in the Bab al-Mandeb, with the Houthis claiming two vessels have been struck. The significance of this cannot possibly be overstated. This isn't simply one or two vessels being hit. It's not vessels being hit at all. It's the fact that the Bab al-Mandeb Strait is now permanently neutered for the remainder of this war. This is the exact same problem that occurred in the Strait of Hormuz. It's not as important that the vessels get hit as that there is a credible threat of vessels being hit. So this is now another strait. Between these two straits, the global energy crisis has now forever been spiked, and there's no unwinding to this action. That was Brett Erickson. Your thoughts on this, Mike?
Well, that's accurate. And remember that Saudi Arabia was using its pipeline to move about 6 million barrels of oil per day to the ports on the Red Sea side that was bypassing the Strait of Hormuz. And effectively what the Houthis just did is they shut down that exit for the 6 million barrels per day. So now we have another 6 million barrels per day that are missing from the global supply chain of oil. And that's on top of the fact that NATO keeps providing drones to Ukraine to bomb oil refineries in Russia. And Ukraine's effort to bomb those refineries has been very effective. Some huge portion of Russia's refining capability is now offline. Maybe it's 30% or more. Russia's being forced to import refined products like diesel at this point, which it didn't have to before. So there's a concerted effort by the United States, which is, of course, influencing NATO and Ukraine, to choke off the world's pathways. And I understand you might say, well, the Houthis did it in the Red Sea. Yeah, but that's in response to America continuing to bomb Iran and also Israel's actions, which are supported by America. So if America were to leave the region, you know, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait would just open right back up, and the Strait of Hormuz would open right back up, and the Suez Canal would be back to normal. But as long as the U.S. naval presence is there and, you know, the Air Force, et cetera, then those restrictions are in place. And this is a stranglehold on our planet. And, you know, Iran can actually hold out longer than we can. Russia can hold out longer than we can. China can hold out longer. It's the West that's the most fragile in this. You know, think about the American people, or from where you're from, you know, the Australian people, or let's say the Canadian people. We are not today, we are not the rugged individuals that our ancestors once were. You know, Western countries are more fragile. People can't get by without, you know, food and air conditioning and, you know, Netflix and everything else. Whereas in Iran, you know, the people there, they've been surviving like this for decades, or Russia with all the sanctions. They've been surviving for decades. They're rugged
sanctions
people.
On both, by the way. Sanctions on
absolutely,
Iran,
absolutely, because
on
of the sanctions.
Yeah. And their totally. Battle, Russia is a very battle hardened nation. The approach to conflict, I mean, I don't think there's much fear there of escalation or anything really. What's happening with Ukraine and Russia isn't being discussed as much in the West anymore because the focus is on the Middle East. But actually, the two conflicts have this in common, which is the destruction of energy infrastructure. Can you touch on that, please?
It's clear that it's deliberate. This is a timed stranglehold on the world's energy supply. And remember, I mean, let's go back to COVID for a bit. I believe that COVID was a bioweapons plandemic psyop operation. You can cut that out if you're going to post this on YouTube, I suppose. But I believe that was an effort to try to achieve some number of deaths, you know, a die-off of human populations. And I believe that it largely failed, actually. It did succeed from the globalist point of view of proving that most humans would obey stupid things. You know, it was an obedience test. But in terms of the die-off test, it did not succeed in huge numbers. But this energy, this is the larger project. This is going to impact. You know, this could kill hundreds of millions of people through famine in 2027 and 2028. I've done the research. I've done the math. I understand the dynamics of where fertilizer comes from, how much fertilizer is missing, how many people will be impacted by that. It's going to put 400 million people at risk of extreme food scarcity. And I'm not saying that 400 million will starve to death, but if this gets worse, it could go there. It could be even worse than that if you start to have geopolitical collapse, nations collapsing, which collapses the trade infrastructure. Then you could have mass starvation or deaths by upheaval that could exceed 400 million people. So from a globalist point of view, this chokehold on energy could finally achieve what they wanted to achieve with COVID, but failed. So this is just sort of round two, war against humanity.
It certainly appears to be that way, and it certainly appears to be deliberate. We've sort of touched on this before. Hard to know who the players that are in on it are, or who's actually, because of course the quote unquote elites are not loyal to each other. They'll turn on each other in a heartbeat because they're all snakes. So who's turning on who? Hard to really know. We just get the propaganda piece and the talks, and we don't really know what's happening in the background. I'm interested on your thoughts about Russia and China. If this conflict continues in the Middle East, which most people are seeing is very likely, what do you think the response from Russia and China will be? Because obviously there's a vested interest there with Iran. And by the way, I just want to mention here, Russia just is discussing now extending the gasoline export ban for the next 6 months, for another 6 months, rather. Major players know where this is heading. But Iran matters to those nations.
Yeah, clearly it's in the interests of both Russia and China to help ensure the survival of Iran. Because if the United States or Israel were to take over Iran, then that would be the gateway to the conquering of China and then Russia, which has been the West's goal for a long period of time. However, Iran has stopped them cold. And Iran has not been defeated. And America has not won. And America does not control the Strait of Hormuz. And part of that, no doubt, is due to perhaps, you know, satellite imagery intelligence from China or Russia, ballistic missile technology sharing, although Iran itself is quite capable of innovating in the aerospace area. You know, they have a lot of engineers, very smart people, very capable. But to answer your first question, Russia and China will survive. They will not be brought down by this, although their economic growth will be it'll be reduced because of this. But then again, so will the whole world, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, because of this energy shock and fertilizer shock, et cetera, the whole world is about to suffer a depression. And the question is the relative economic survival of China and Russia versus what the West is doing. See, this war was pursued with the idea that this wouldn't affect us in America. Trump thought, oh, we could just release strategic petroleum reserves of oil. We could keep oil prices low. Or we could manipulate the markets with money printing, and we could place a bunch of paper shorts on oil. We could keep oil prices low. You can do that for a short time, not forever. And we're running up against the end of that time. Once that's done, then the economic repercussions on the West start to become dire. We're only maybe 2 months away from that. It's going to hit us hard before the midterms. So, you know, politically, the question is, can Trump and the GOP survive what they have unleashed in terms of the pain and suffering that they have inflicted indirectly on the American people? And gas prices and food prices are the two biggest things that American voters notice. They know what they pay for gas, even if Trump doesn't, and they know what they're paying for food, even if the White House is lying about it and telling you that inflation's going down. That's not what people experience in their day-to-day lives. So there will be strong political repercussions, and then there's going to be more joblessness. There's going to be more homelessness and also hunger in America. And I predict that in 2027, the long lines for food banks and food aid in America will be historic. It's going to get bad.
Let me theorize something with you. Laura Ingraham speaking out and saying that, you know, poll numbers are really low and people are not happy about this war was curious to me, because Fox News is in the business of acting like everybody since the moment they were born wanted this war, it seems. So it was curious to me that she did that. Do you think that was sort of an appeasement? Was it, let's let the masses hear what they want? Or was this actually a push where the establishment is saying, okay, now we're in trouble, we need to dial this back? I can't see a path for the US to just suddenly go, all right, you know what, we're not doing this anymore. I can't see Trump doing that. I really can't. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you. First of all, anyone who watches Fox News, that's their own fault. you have a choice, right? You have a choice where you get your news. And if you're getting fed propaganda from Fox News, it's just as dumb as watching, you know, CNN during the Biden
regime. But we're doing propaganda watch though, right? So why is Fox doing this?
Well, I think Fox actually creates messaging for Trump. I think a lot of their programs have one person audience, and that's Trump. They want Trump to think that it's popular what he's doing in the war. Remember, Fox is controlled by the CIA. Mm. So is CNN, by the way, obviously. So is, you know, to some extent, obviously, the Washington Post, et cetera. The CIA wants this war because they benefit from chaos. They benefit from all the money laundering, weapons laundering, human trafficking, you know, all the side effects of chaos, right? So they want this war to continue, and they want to tell Trump that this is really popular. But of course, in reality, on the streets of America, this is wildly unpopular. I don't even think there's 25% support for Trump in America today. I think the number is less than 20%. And if we have midterm elections, we'll probably find that to be the case. And the GOP is going to be in for a massive shock when they find out that all the people who voted for Trump either just don't show up to vote, or if they were independents, they're going to vote intentionally against the GOP. They're going to vote for any Democrat on the ballot, regardless of what that Democrat stands for, because now the common popular hatred against Trump for what he has done to the lives of the American people, that hatred will be driving a lot of votes. It'll be a protest vote. And the Democrats are going to sweep into power here in the midterms. No question about it.
Yeah, if they allow it to occur, I agree with you. To me, it almost seems like they're ready. The Uniparty is ready for it to go blue again. What I'm just painfully aware of, Mike, is that all of this is so fake. And you know, and I know that you agree. It's the same as agenda, different flavor, different rhetoric. That's basically the case.
100%.
And so if people, and I've heard people and, you know, people that I know that are saying, well, if the Democrats are going to put a stop to this craziness, I'm for them. Now, I don't agree with that, obviously, because I just don't agree that any of them are good, really. But I understand their thinking, right? I understand their thinking. Can you foresee a situation where Democrats actually seriously put a stop to the war? Because I can't.
I can see the Democrats running lots of investigations into Trump and the Trump family. That could happen in the House beginning next year. Now, they don't control the DOJ at that point. So it would be 2 years more before they could potentially control the DOJ. So until that time, Trump can probably survive it just with controlling the media and denying everything. But if there are some smoking guns to be found in terms of, you know, insider trading or corruption or, you know, pay for play deals involving Arab Gulf states, by the way, that seem to be lining the pockets of Trump family members. If some of that comes out and gets traction, then Trump could be forced into resigning. And then we probably get J.D. Vance. And then, and you know, Maria, you've covered this. You know who's behind J.D. Vance. You know,
oh, yes.
Right, the incentives.
He's a Palantir lab creation. That's what I call it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right, and maybe that's the plan is, you know, have Trump get us into this insane war, cause economic collapse while they're building out the flock cameras and the other tracking systems. You mentioned Axon earlier off camera. While that infrastructure is built, and then roll in J.D. Vance to say, well, you know, we have to declare martial law because, you know, the left-wing uprising is getting dangerous. You know, we have to restore the rule of law. So lockdowns, government licenses for travel, you know, you're only allowed a certain number of miles per day, and the CBDCs might control your purchases of gasoline anyway. Your smart meters are going to control how much you can charge your EV. So this is why I have advocated, believe it or not, for people getting off-grid solar systems. So you can charge your own EV right now using sunlight, and you're bypassing the Strait of Hormuz, and you're bypassing the whole grid. Now, they can still see your license plate from the flock cameras, but I have no doubt there are going to be some clever innovations that we'll probably see in the next 6 months to block flock cameras from reading your license plates. So
yep.
Maybe even dynamically based on where they're located. So that could be interesting.
I wanted to talk to you about this, something that you mentioned there, which was sort of the narrative about the left and everything. I don't deny that there are leftists, right? I know that these people exist, people who are, you know, they want socialism. They want to do extreme stuff like, you know, bring everyone to the same level and have the government dole out checks and trust the government to have government run supermarkets and all of this, which I think is a total nightmare. So I don't deny the reality that those people exist. What I deny is that the elites are somehow left and right. They're not. They have their agenda and they use that paradigm to play us off against each other. So with that in mind, Scott Bessent recently came out and spoke about, Stephen Miller spoke about using NSPM7 that will lead to the debanking, defunding, and disruption of left-wing political terrorists that are operating in our country. Now, here's why this really concerns me, Mike. People hear that and they think, oh, yeah, the left needs to be dismantled. Well, here's what is defined as left-wing political terrorism in effect. Anti-Americanism, which could translate to simply disagreeing with Trump. It could translate to this very broadcast, right, where we're just fleshing things out. Anti-capitalism, so community opposition to flock, data centers, all of the things that we're told are going to make America's economy great. anti-Christianity, specifically Christians whose theology differs from Christian Zionism. Extremism on migration, race, or gender, well, that could be critics of ICE, for example. Now, I'm totally for mass deportations, and people need to come here legally, but I'm not okay with people's civil liberties being, especially citizens, being violated in that process. I'm sure there's a better way to do it. Then the U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said that the Trump admin is deploying the full power of the Treasury Department to identify, disrupt, and dismantle the financial networks that support political terrorism. His conversation comes right after Stephen Miller talking about using NSPM7 to debank who they consider left-wing terrorists. So my question to you, Mike, and I had similar concerns, even Secretary Rubio then again said NSPM7 embodies, quote, the infrastructure, the partnership, and the strategy to defeat the scourge of far-left terror. Now, I'm sure you've been subjected to this by some people who are still hardcore MAGA loyalists claiming that you're somehow a leftist, a Democrat, or any of the above slurs. I certainly have had that thrown at me for just being a common sense individual. I'm anything but that, obviously. But I have concerns that rational people who are simply asking questions are going to be put into this category of far-left terrorists. Sorry, that was a really long-winded way to get to that. But do you kind of see my point with the influencer rhetoric and all of this that's going out there?
Yes. And the picture that you're painting there is one of the factional warfare that happened in Washington, D.C. So under Obama and under Biden, this exact thing took place, but it painted right-wing influencers as a danger to the Republic. And they had a list of terms of who's right wing, people who believe in Christianity, right? Or people who own guns, or, you know, people who love the American flag or whatever, right? It was a whole list that was similarly crazy as the list that you just read. So that faction was simply trying to dismantle all right wing money flows. And they went after churches and they went after nonprofits. And so they essentially debanked, or they took away the nonprofit status of nonprofit groups, for example, or they would refuse to grant nonprofit status. What's happening today is simply the inverse of that, where you have the Trump administration that's going to war to dismantle left-wing money flows, whether those be corporations or nonprofit groups, you know, NGOs or different front groups that have, I mean, some of those are funded by George Soros. You know, some of those have been involved in organized protests and bussing people in protest Trump during, you know, the campaigns for his first term. And all of that was artificial to begin with, right? But when you step back, you have to realize these are factions fighting against each other. Like, think about this administration dismantled USAID, right? Which was just a massive amount of, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars of fraudulent money laundering. But then they recreated it under the State Department under Marco Rubio, where the money laundering continues just for, you know, right-wing purposes, you see? So, and the war money laundering still goes on. They're still sending money for weapons to Ukraine or Israel, and they're begging for another $1.5 trillion for the Pentagon, more than half of which is just a bunch of kickbacks and fraud and bribes. I mean, how on earth could you spend that much money building weapons when they don't even work, you know? So it's just the same story. It's corruption and fraud, but they're just at war with the other side, right? So there are factions, even though both factions want war, both factions want to enslave the American people, both factions want censorship and centralized government control, but the two factions fight with each other over which faction is currently in charge, so they can run the money laundering scams.
Can you foresee a situation where former MAGA loyalists turned critics fall into this category that they're saying is far left?
Possibly, but there would be a lot of pushback on that. The lower hanging fruit for the Trump administration is to go after the still sort of the old echoes of USAID and the NGOs that are clearly fraudulent. You know, there's a lot of fraudulent money laundering in certain parts of like Black Lives Matter, for example. And some of that's been exposed and what they did with the money, you know. There's a lot more of that yet to be uncovered. And, you know, who was it? Nick Shirley, who I'm sure was selected for this job, you know, exposing the Somali community, a lot of, you know, school money laundering and things like that. And I don't think that was just organic. It wasn't spontaneous, right? Someone gave him that story and sent him there to make that story blow up. That's the faction is running that operation to expose that, to try to shut down that money laundering. And it is money laundering. The thing is, that kind of money laundering happens every day out of the Pentagon, you know? So, you know, on the left, yeah, Somalis are money laundering in Minnesota. On the right, Pentagon's money laundering 1,000 times larger, building weapon systems that don't work, like, you know, the U.S. interceptor missiles that have like a 5% interception rate, you know? But the rest of that money goes into the pockets of family members of U.S. senators or people like that. It's a giant... As long as your government can print money, they will print and print and print, and they will distribute it to themselves or, you know, their families, their people, to shore up their own power. And when the other party comes into power, they will try to dismantle that system and then set up their own money laundering system. But basically, the United States of America today is nothing but a political pillaging operation. That's where we are.
It's really sad because it was supposed to be the opposite of that. Everything was supposed to, you know, the promise was the total opposite of that, Mike. It was supposed to be a return to normalcy in all aspects of that word. And, you know, I was just ranting.
Well, that's...
I was ranting just earlier before our interview about how, you know, the algorithm stopped pushing the transgender madness in our faces, but it's still going on. They tried to include funding for it in the big, beautiful bill. So, I mean, what's actually tangibly changed other than rhetoric? I don't know. But I do want to sort of go back to our conversation, you know, what we initially started with, which was this coming energy crisis and the war. In terms of the impacts on the West, I mean, we've already spoken about the cost of fuel, gas, diesel. It's going to skyrocket. That's inevitable. Even if the war stopped today, we would still feel it. What other impacts do you see across the West? I know we've spoken about nations that will face famine. The West probably isn't that unless they engineer it.
Yeah, well, another very large ramification is the loss of reputation of the United States Empire. So our military is no longer feared the way it once was. I mean, our military was feared in 2025, not so much anymore because Iran stopped our military. No doubt China has taken note of this important fact. In fact, China's probably using this to test certain kinds of weapons or radar systems or, you know, stealth radar detection, whatever, deploying things with Iran to see how they work and gathering test data from actual engagements with U.S. forces. So if the U.S. Navy can no longer run around the world and dominate the projection of terror, which is... That's really the job of the Navy since the end of World War II, is to terrorize the world into complying with the U.S. dollar as its settlement currency. I'm sorry for any Navy veterans that might be offended by that, but that is the job of the Navy: terrorize the world into compliance with the dollar. Period. Okay, and those days are over. So what that means is that the dollar is now on its long decline, and we're seeing this with BRICS nations. And China announcing through the Shanghai Gold Exchange a new gold settlement and probably soon a partially gold-backed settlement system that bypasses the use of the dollar in international trade. And so, you know, the dollar's days are numbered. I'm not saying tomorrow, but as the U.S. government just prints and prints and prints, but the rest of the world is selling treasuries, that's coming more from Japan, by the way, or dumping dollars because it doesn't need to use dollars to buy oil because it's using the, you know, this Chinese settlement system that's backed by physical audited gold that China's probably about to announce, then the power of the U.S. is destroyed. That's really what Trump will have accomplished, is the destruction of the power of the American empire.
Do you think he wants that?
I don't know. I can't get into his mind. I wouldn't dare try. Not sure how many voices there are in there, but I'm pretty sure he thinks some of them are Iranian negotiators. he's either incompetent or wholly compromised. Maybe a little bit of both. Who knows? But it's the election of Trump will, in terms of what future historians say about the fall of our republic, the election, this most recent election of Trump, which is characteristically very different from his first term, this recent election will be seen as spelling the end of the constitutional republic. I have no doubt.
Do you think that final question for you, because in when I, you know, talk about, I've been involved in American politics and the goings on here, you know, even from abroad, because America matters so much for the whole world. This is especially because it's the last bastion of free speech and freedom left in the world. And when I talk to regular American people, that's still in them. And when I'm critical of the government, that's not me being critical of America. I love this country with all my heart. I love the people. One of my biggest the things that breaks my heart and infuriates me at the same time, Mike, is that I view the American people as so honest, so genuine, as a common trait, especially in the South. And therefore, they have been very easily propagandized because they want to trust, because that's their nature, right? And I hate seeing the government take advantage of them because they are good people, right? But I want to know from you, I mean, do you think that people will continue to put up with this?
Yes.
Will conservatives continue to put up with it? Okay, explain that answer.
Well, I don't want to sound insulting, but there's a pretty large audience of Fox News that has to be described as just boomers with tumors. I mean, the brain tumors have, or whatever's going on with them, or all the jabs or whatever has taken away any ability to process reality. And you know, not trying to insult people of that age, there are a lot of well-informed boomers, you know, who are even part of my audience.
But
the vast majority of the older Americans are, I don't know, they've lost the will to investigate or to think for themselves. And many of them were, you know, they were part of the 1960s protest. And they were the hippies in the 1960s protesting, right? Or the 1970s protest, you know, and they voted for, you know, Jimmy Carter and whatever, because they wanted change. And now they're just okay, as long as, you know, don't touch Social Security, don't touch my healthcare, I need my prescriptions or whatever, and that's it. So that contingent is not going to make any changes. They're not even interested in change. The younger generations, to make matters worse, most of the younger generation, they're okay with socialism. Some are okay with communism. And they are so impoverished by the current so-called capitalism, which is not capitalism. No. You know, it's crony. It's a technocracy where winners are chosen by the government and by regulators. It's not a free market system, but they've been taught that free markets don't work and free markets will impoverish you. And thus they've become advocates for the redistribution of wealth and socialist policies. Look at the election of Mamdani, or Mamdani, is it?
Mamdani, who ran on arresting Netanyahu and then said, oh, sorry, we've looked into it. We can't.
Right.
You didn't look into it when you were running? You just looked into it now?
Like,
come on.
The one thing he could have done, you know, arrest Netanyahu. Like, he would have been the hero of the world for 15 minutes, you know. But his policies will, of course, wreck New York City. You know, government-run grocery stores. Can't wait for that. We've seen that in North Korea. It doesn't turn out very well. You know, food shortages are the first thing that will happen. And then a black market of, you know, bread sold at real prices. And then the police arresting people for selling bread at unapproved prices. And then you have a police state and a black market and food shortages and government price controls. Welcome to hell, you know? So that, but young people mostly don't yet understand all those things. They just haven't lived long enough, or they don't have enough knowledge to understand the dynamic that I just described. So we're going to see a massive uprising of younger Americans who will demand socialism because otherwise they can't afford a house, they can't afford rent, they can't afford a car, and soon they won't be able to afford to eat. And they're going to be screaming and begging and pushing for socialism as the answer, because that's sort of their default conclusion, that the government needs to give us money so we don't starve.
Yeah, well, that's it's coming. That's what the whole world's been engineered towards, by the way, because yeah. UBI fits perfectly into that, and they've made yes. sure that everyone's being prepared for that and conditioned for that. You know, Mike, I don't disagree with your bleak outlook. I always have hope, and I have hope that God will turn things around, or at least prepare us so that we can survive what's coming. I know you're really big on preparation. Before you go, quick reminder to everyone, make sure that you are doing as much as you possibly can, even if it's just a little bit, to increase your self-sufficiency, whether it be growing your own food, whether it be, you know, having a well and systems to get your own water or your own energy, whatever the case may be, do that as much as possible. And Mike is a really great resource for you. So you can go to brightvideos.com, where he's uploading regularly, a ton of really, really valuable information that you can find there. You can also follow Mike on X, Health Ranger, at Health Ranger. Any other links that you want to discuss, Mike?
Naturalnews.com is where I publish articles each day with intricate infographics as well. So that can be useful. That's my article format.
Well, we're so grateful for you, Mike. Thank you so much for your honesty. And I really, really hope that people are prepared for what is coming. I know that people who take this seriously will be. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Maria. Always an honor to join you. Take care. If you'd like to help support us, check out all of the affiliate deals I put together for you at rangerdeals.com. And if you go there, you'll see I have selected, I've done due diligence on all of these affiliates. There's really not that many, but we have partners like Battalion Metals, co-founded by Tucker Carlson, Ness's Organic CBDA Hemp Extract, Above Phone Models that are de-googled phones, Red Life, here's the peptide company, Limitless, you know, Petmectin, and so much more, including the Satellite Phone Store, VP.net. And for almost all of these, you can use discount code RANGER here, or sometimes it's something else like Brighteon 50, but normally the discount code is RANGER, which will save you something on these deals. Now, we do earn a little bit off of these affiliate deals, but it's no additional cost to you, and it helps support our platform and our work for humanity, including our AI projects that offer free open source knowledge in multiple languages. You can check those out at brightlearn.ai and brightanswers.ai. So thank you for supporting us. Check out rangerdeals.com anytime you want to save money on really high-end products and solutions that I personally endorse. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Thanks for watching.